It's a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, we're going to take a deeper dive on some of the questions we were asked during our Reddit AMA on Monday.
We'll talk about why Kelly Olynyk and Bam Adebayo could be Miami's centers of the future and why we think Justice Winslow's recent success is sustainable. Thank you for listening, for subscribing. Let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and OnTheHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRec Sports, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
We are back. It's been a while, I feel like, since we did a podcast together. We recorded a few last week. We had some with just interviews of players go up last week. And then, of course, you did the recap solo on Monday because my flight got canceled. But I am back home with a computer in front of me. I am able to record, and we are here recapping and sort of revisiting the Reddit Ask Me Anything that you and I did on Monday, and we encourage our listeners to go back to that Reddit page, reddit.com/heat, and check that out. We are going to review those questions, the best questions that we had from the AMA, the ones that we wanted to sort of just dive deeper into for those of you who didn't see it and want to hear more about it, or did see it and want to hear more about it. And let's start with the first one. Justice Winslow has been playing really good as of late, should be really well, or noticeably better than before. Is this a hot streak, or is this sustainable? David, you and I, we both thought that it was more sustainable than just a streak, right?
That's right, Grammar Police. We sure did. look, I think, you know, I've been probably a little bit harder on Winslow than you have. I think you had more faith in his ability to kind of keep growing and turning it around. I hadn't seen anything yet to show that that was warranted, but I think we're starting to see more and more of him realizing his potential. And I think understanding his role, like part of the problem, and I think we see this with a lot of players around the NBA, a guy like who you don't particularly care for, and Andrew Wiggins, others like this around the league. Let's just say when you're chosen early in the draft, there are these kind of high expectations that are very difficult to meet. And I think that's where Winslow fell in as a top 10 pick. People were expecting him to come in here and be potentially a savior. He kind of assumed that responsibility himself his second season when Dwayne Wade left to Chicago. And unfortunately, he got hurt, so he wasn't really able to live up to those expectations. And he had struggled in trying to meet them in the first place. Now, it seems that he's healthy. He's got a nice spark to his game. He's come off the bench lately and provided a boost offensively. He's led that second team alongside Wade. He's making nifty passes. He's knocking that shot down at a very high level, shooting 43% since the All-Star break from three-point range. That's exactly what we need from him. And, of course, he still provides really quality defense, something he's done since he was a rookie. So you tie all that together, and these are, I think, the foundational blocks of a really solid role player. And I think that's where we could expect Winslow to be, or who we can expect him to be throughout the rest of his career. And not necessarily a superstar, but a really good role player that can do a lot of different things and add to a winning team.
You know, that shooting, I think, is going to be streaky always, because it just is for most players. He's not a natural shooter, but if he can hover around that 30 to 35% range for most of his career per season, that's all you're going to need. And when Pat Riley drafted Justice Winslow, he came out and compared him. You know, everybody wanted to make the Kawhi Leonard comparison, right? Because everybody back then was looking for their Kawhi Leonard, and they kind of just in the lead up to the draft, everybody had sort of pegged Justice Winslow as, if there is a Kawhi, it's this guy.
Sure.
But Riley came out in the press conference after the draft and compared Winslow to Draymond Green, and he has been right on with that comparison so far. I think there are only a few players in the league that have that Draymond Green skill set. Now they may not be as good as Draymond Green, meaning I guess a top 20 player or wherever you would put Draymond in that, you know, in those rankings. But even on the spectrum of that kind of skill set, you look at a guy like Draymond, you look at a guy like Houston's PJ Tucker. Those are really important pieces to the two best teams in the league, and they would not be where they are without those guys. Now, are they the best player on the team? No. Are they even one of the top three players on the team? No. Maybe not. But
they're essential to winning.
They are essential to winning, and they unlock so many things that both of those teams do, not only defensively, where all those guys stand out, but offensively in their way that they set screens, and they're able to mix up matchups, and they're able to facilitate and do all those things. Winslow is on that spectrum. And that is and we're going to talk about this more in our next question here, but you look at other young players on the Heat's roster like Richardson or Bam, they don't have that skill set. They have other skill sets that are very valuable, but there's only so many guys that can play with that skill set, and Winslow is doing that right now. We are finally starting to see that, and I think that's what makes this success sustainable. It's not only his shooting that's come along, and it's really come along. His shooting stroke looks better. But it's the way in which the Heat are using him that makes me think that this is more sustainable than just a shooting hot streak. It's not like Winslow's just standing in the corner and making threes all of a sudden. He's being used the right way finally, and that's what makes me believe that it's sustainable. But let's move on to our next question here, and it's a really challenging one.
It is.
This is maybe the headliner question of the whole AMA. If you only got to keep one of the following players, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, and Bam, who would it be and why?
Yeah, that was tough. Because honestly, I mean, for people like us that follow this team and these players as closely as we do, you know, you're going to develop personal feelings, or you know, you appreciate somebody's game, etc. And so it's kind of hard to make that call whether or not you know you like a player like Richardson, kind of earning his keep. You Bam Adebayo injects this incredible energy coming off the bench or starting game, something that Hassan Whiteside doesn't do, and of course Justice's slow development has been a great storyline to follow all season long. So it's hard to make that choice, but we both agreed, strangely enough, on the same player, and I think we should break down the others. Let's start off with Bam Adebayo. Why didn't you think he was the player to keep?
You know, his physical talent and being as young as he is really enticing, and everything we've seen from him, I mean, he is the most physically gifted of this trio, and I don't think that there's any doubt about that. I mean, he's taller, he's bigger, he's maybe even faster than any of these guys on just a sprint, or at least as fast. I mean, this guy, he has been nothing but impressive as a rookie, and it's really nothing against him other than the fact that he plays center. And
that's about it, yeah.
And it's, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know what his ceiling is. You know, there was some comparisons during the summer league that he could be Karl-Anthony Towns. Maybe he could be, again, sort of similar to that, where he's a center who can defend out on the perimeter. In Karl-Anthony Towns' case, that's more of an idea than an actual reality at this point. But, nice. You know, make shots from the mid-range and maybe even later on for Bam from three-point range. Maybe there's some of that, but at the end of the day, he might just end up being a rim-rolling center, and that's sort of a more acquisitional kind of player in today's game. And plus, you look at what the Heat have. They already have Hassan Whiteside. They already have Kelly Olynyk at the position. If I had to choose one, that's kind of what was in the way for Bam. What about you?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm still not sure whether or not the kind of flashes that we saw as far as his shooting is concerned pre-draft, I don't know if that's going to necessarily translate at any point in his NBA career. Now, the encouraging signs are that not only was he a really fluid shooter in those pre-draft workouts, but he still has a good stroke in his free throws, even as a professional or as a collegiate player. So there's hope, right? I mean, we both expect that at some point he's going to be able to knock down that shot more confidently. He just hasn't done it yet. And so you kind of have to play wait and see games. And that's unfortunate for a guy like Bam, who does so much else so particularly well. But at his size, even though he can guard and he has shown the proficiency and ability to guard, you know, smaller players out on the perimeter, I'd still like somebody a little bit more capable of switching 1 through 5. And that's not something that Bam can do at this point. So, and yes, as you pointed out, with two other centers on the roster, unfortunately, he just isn't a necessary position to fill. So of those three, Bam is the most likely or the least likely to be kept.
And then you look at Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow, obviously. And right now, Josh Richardson is the better player. Sure. He is Miami's best two-way player. It's been said. We've said it. But I think you and I look at Winslow's long-term ceiling and development, and going back to what I said before, his just general skill set, which is just a little bit harder to find.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what gave him the edge over Josh Richardson. But look at Josh Richardson. I mean, he is your prototype 3-and-D guy right now. I mean, the guy can hit threes off the dribble and in the catch-and-shoot situations. And he defends at, you know, I don't know how many other players in the league you want defending opposing guards in the league other than Josh Richardson. You look at guys like Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, even though I think he's a little overrated as far as how he defends. Klay Thompson's certainly up there as well. Josh Richardson's right up there as far as a defender. And then again, with his ability to shoot threes and then do a few things in the pick and roll and off the dribble and driving to the basket, there's still a ways in development in those areas. But for right now, his skill set's really enticing. This wasn't an easy decision to make.
No, it wasn't. But unfortunately for Josh, the decision was that, at least for me, I kind of focused on his frame and the fact that, you know, although he may have gained some weight since he was a rookie, I just don't know that he's ever going to gain enough to be strong enough to guard bigger fours and fives. You know, even though the league is much smaller across the board, you're still going to need some strength to be able to guard those bigger players. And I think that's where Richardson can be a little bit of a liability because he just doesn't have that strength. And you look at a guy like Winslow, and I don't know that he's necessarily – he's not as active a shot blocker as Richardson is, but he's just as capable of defending guards along the perimeter as Richardson is, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Josh Richardson's got that springy, explosive defensive thing that he's got going. Right. Really anticipatory, but Winslow is
just bodies up. Yeah, he moves his feet.
He just bodies up, right?
Yeah,
you're not going to get by Justice Winslow. If you get by Josh Richardson, there's a case. There is a chance he might snatch your shot from behind you.
Yes,
but that's just never going to even be in the cards for Justice Winslow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's different. It's a different style of a different approach. Like he'll poke the ball free, or even if you try and get off a shot, there's a good chance he's going to get swatted. Yeah, he's going to swat it into the stands or something like that. But
that's my favorite Justice Winslow play is when guys try to post him up and he just sort of boops the ball out of their hands.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing, and it's just a loose ball.
But
luckily, if you're the Heat, they don't have to make this decision, right? They've got Josh Richardson. They've got Justice Winslow. They've got Bam Adebayo. But a really interesting question nonetheless. And I was honestly, David, surprised that you picked Winslow, but pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, well, you know, I know a lot of our listeners might point out that I haven't always been on the Winslow bandwagon, but I'm. It's not that I'm necessarily coming.
The Winslow wagon.
The Winslow wagon, yeah.
The Winslow wagon.
I mean, I've just been impressed with his play lately, and I'm hoping that it's going to be something that we can continue to see.
Up next, we'll tell you why Hassan Whiteside's best basketball is behind him. But first, quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On NBA. It's the only daily NBA podcast that's less than 30 minutes long and delivers the most important news, scores, and storylines of the day. Perfect to listen to on your morning commute, while you're at the gym, or during your lunch break.
And make sure to listen on Tuesdays when Wes and I will be hosting for the rest of the season. To get the latest episode every day, make sure you subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app.
We'll get to a question about Wayne Ellington that we didn't get a chance to answer in the AMA later on. But let's get to this next one. Concerning Hassan Whiteside. Is there a more improved Hassan on the horizon, or has he peaked? He's not getting any more athletic or younger. He also doesn't have a great handle or vision. Any dent to his strengths won't be compensated with great overall improvement in other areas, in my opinion. David, what do you think?
You know, as I wrote then, I would have said peaked if I hadn't seen Whiteside's development as a passer this season, something that neither you or I really expected. And then again, the problem then becomes, is it that he's not physically capable? Like, I mean, there are certainly limitations to Hassan Whiteside physically. He does not have the same spring he did a couple seasons ago. He's been battling minor injuries on and off. But even at his peak, I think he was probably a little slower, a little more lumbering than your typical center nowadays. You look at a player, even I was noticing a guy like Jonas Valanciunas, who I think you made the comparison, and he's a lot quicker than Whiteside, which is very surprising because you see this big bearded European fellow and you think, oh, he's going to be a little bit slow as he might have been 10, 20, you know, 30 years ago in the NBA. Not so much. Valanciunas is quicker than a guy like than Whiteside, and that's kind of unexpected. It really caught me off guard, but he has been. He's shown that he can, you know, fake the three and kind of drive to the hoop, something that I don't think Whiteside is capable of, to be honest.
No. No, and you're right. And look, I want to give Hassan Whiteside maybe some benefit of the doubt, even though I'm not quite there to do that. But he's been dealing with a lot of injuries just this season. So maybe over the summer he gets healthy, he gets back into better shape, and he really heals from those injuries, that those lower body injuries that he dealt with this season. And maybe he does get a little bit quicker next year and works on his dribble. I mean, we've seen Whiteside do things before. Like, we've been surprised with a spin move here and there. It's not like it's out of the question for him. I don't even think he knows how to do it. He just kind of, it happens sometimes. But the Valanciunas comparison is a really good one, because you look at where the Raptors were going into the season, and Valanciunas was just, you know, a $20 million anchor on that salary cap. And he wasn't even, you know, there's an argument to be made that they were better off with Serge Ibaka playing the five, or even Jakob Poeltl, putting him in that spot and letting him develop. And he's got a little bit more versatility to his game. This is not unlike the situation that the Heat are in with Kelly Olynyk, who is forced to play, you know, either at the four or the five at times, or off the bench because Whiteside's standing there. And Bam Adebayo, who is a young guy who was drafted in the lottery, who is more versatile than the starter in front of him. But there it is, Whiteside there, and the Heat gave him that big contract a couple summers ago. And they're not going to be able to trade him, you know, barring somebody just paying a ridiculous price for him, or willing to take on that price tag from Whiteside. So if that's the case here, I think the development in Whiteside is not in his skill set necessarily, but in the utilization of Whiteside. And again, let's go back to Jonas Valanciunas. What the Raptors are doing there, it's not a perfect front core matchup with Serge Ibaka and Valanciunas. I mean, you talk about guys who don't pass the ball. Neither of them really pass the ball. Valanciunas is better at that than Whiteside, but Serge Ibaka is infamously not a passer. If you could play Kelly Olynyk and Whiteside in that front court, maybe going forward, but you're playing Whiteside at those 20 to 25 minutes a game, and right now he's between 25 and about 29 minutes a game. You further lower those minutes, lower the wear and tear on his body. Maybe he stays fresher for longer this season, and he could be more efficient in smaller doses. David, that's something I know you're really huge on, small, efficient doses of Hassan Whiteside. That, I think, would be the bet. That would be how Whiteside's game could improve going further to play out the rest of his contract.
And you know, there's also the mental factor that you can't overlook, and the fact that so much of Whiteside's defense, or his abilities in general, and his engagement in games seems like it's self-motivated. He needs to be able to find something to push himself at a nearly daily level, and that's something that we haven't seen from him throughout his career. Is that there's games where he's very engaged, like we saw recently against Joel Embiid, and then there are other games that he's off and not necessarily a factor in a Miami Heat victory. So that's a problem, and that's where I think we can really see him become a stable, dependable role player, if not necessarily a star. Mm-hmm.
And it'll create more time for guys like Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk off the bench as well. Coming up next, we'll take a look at how the Heat could keep Wayne Ellington next season. But first, did you know that you could stream this podcast, Locked on Heat, on Spotify right now? It's easy. Open Spotify on your device or on your desktop. Click on the Browse button and then click on the Podcast section, or just search for Locked on Heat. You can also stream the show on your smart speaker, such as the Amazon Echo or Google Home. Now it's that much easier to play up to date on the, or to stay up to date on the latest episode of Locked on Heat, the only daily Miami Heat podcast. All right, we got a couple more questions here that we didn't get a chance to answer in the Reddit AMA, and then we got one mailbag question that we just threw in here because that's what we're doing today. We're just answering questions. The first one is, what do you think is going to happen with Dion Waiters and Wayne Ellington when the season is over? What would be your ideal situation to keep Ellington if we keep him? So this is really coming down to, well, David, let's start with the Dion Waiters thing. What do you think is going to happen when the season's
I don't think
Dion?
Anything can happen. I you know, he's been noticeably absent. He's not along the sideline at games. That's kind of concerning, I think. Like, maybe there's no need for him to be there. Maybe it's too hard for him to be there. Maybe they told him they don't need him around. But I'm kind of concerned that maybe he's not developed the kind of chemistry off the court that he should have with his teammates. I don't know what the case is. Maybe I'm just reading too much into it, but it is a little alarming to me. But regardless of that fact, he's on the roster. He has a four-year deal. He's played out the first year of that deal, and he's on there for another three. I don't know that anything can happen. I don't think you're going to be able to move a player like Dion, as young as he is. He's only going to be 26 next season. You know, considering his injury and considering the body of his NBA career at this point, his inconsistency and everything else, I don't know that he's going to necessarily be a target for a team to acquire via trade. You're going to still have to commit $30-something million dollars to pay him over the next three seasons. That's not ideal. So unless you're going to get something else in return along with Dion Waiters, I don't know that any team is going to be willing to take on Waiters' contract. So he's part of this team, whether you like it or not.
Not this summer, for sure. I mean, he's making $11 million this year. That increases to $11.5 next season. And then in the two seasons after that, he's making more than $12 million a season. So that's tough for a team to trade for, especially given that they're not going to know whether or not Deion Waiters is healthy or not. Right. And that you're not going to take on that sort of money commitment if you don't know if Deion is healthy. And so it not only requires, you know, in a hypothetical world where if Deion Waiters is going to get traded, it's going to essentially take somebody to say, we liked Deion Waiters' game before he was hurt. That's not every team in the NBA. And it's going to take us willing to make a risk. We liked his game so much that we're going to have to make that. We're willing to take that risk. I think Waiters is here to stay at least until he can prove that he's healthy and maybe Miami can move him down the road. But for this summer, he's not moving anywhere. Wayne Ellington is a tough one. I think the Heat would obviously like to have him back, but as it stands right now, they have about a $2 million cushion between where they're at in their contracts and the luxury tax apron. Now they could get to about $4 million of that cushion if they let Jordan Mickey and Rodney Magruder go. But I think that they're going to look at Rodney Magruder and say, look, this guy is somebody who has developed as a three-point shooter in the 2 years he's been in Miami. He is preferably a shooting guard, not a small forward. And he offers a little bit more defensively than Wayne Ellington does. And he's certainly much younger than Wayne Ellington. And he's going to be a much cheaper player than Wayne Ellington. I think they're going to look at Magruder as sort of the replacement of Wayne Ellington, as well as trying to get more contributions, more consistent contributions, especially from three-point range from somebody like Tyler Johnson or Josh Richardson going forward. I think that's the way it goes. I don't see a way that Ellington comes back.
Unfortunately, I don't either. But we are in agreement that Miami would prefer to keep Ellington on the roster if they couldn't. Okay.
Yes.
So, you know, I think what the person was asking here was, you know, whether or not there was some kind of scenario where Miami could trade enough players to free up any cap space so where they could sign Ellington. And that's not the case. If they're even able to move, I mean, it would take something, well, monumental. And I don't know that there's any team.
A big contract. I mean, I think the only ideal situation would be you trade Tyler Johnson. And that's not because I think Ellington is a better player than Tyler Johnson, but he's making $19 million next season. If you could trade Tyler Johnson, you do it anyway. And then that would maybe facilitate some room to keep Wayne Ellington. But other than that, I mean, I'd still rather, I think, have Hassan Whiteside than Wayne Ellington. I'd still rather have Goran Dragic than Wayne Ellington. Maybe you can move James Johnson and keep Wayne Ellington, but I still think I might rather have James Johnson than Wayne Ellington. I like Wayne Ellington as a player. He's really important, but I think it's even more important to get more contributions from guys like Tyler, Josh, and Rodney going forward. Young guys that are really more the future of this team. And not have to pay Ellington $8 to $10 million a year, which is probably going to cost to keep him.
I think that's fair. I mean, look, a player like Ellington going into the free agency market, it's going to be tough because obviously there's the journeyman issue here. You know, the fact that he was not a particularly impactful player before he came to Miami. And you know, Miami has developed a well-earned reputation for being able to resuscitate a player's career. So I think other teams will look at Wayne and realize that he's probably not going to be as valuable on their rosters, but they're still going to try to offer because he is such a reliable shooter and he does offer that one particular skill at such a high level. They're going to offer him a lot of money. 8 to 10 might be on the higher end, but I think it's still, maybe it'll be more in the terms of like a 4 year, 5 year deal at 6 or 7 per. If somebody offers him 5 or 35, which is more than Miami can offer him, I don't see why a player like Ellington wouldn't take that, considering what he's made throughout his career. That would be the best contract that I think he could possibly get. So
our next question comes from Billy, who writes in, and this was a mailbag question. This wasn't a Reddit AMA. We kind of snuck this one in, but we wanted to answer it, so we did it. It's our podcast. It's our rules. Billy writes in, Kyrie Irving will be out the next couple of weeks because of surgery. Should Miami be passive and try to maintain their 7th seed? If we get a chance to play a Kyrie-less Celtics for even half of the series, you would think Miami has a fighting chance of making it to the second round. David, this is something that we've talked about. I'm not sure if we talked about it necessarily on the podcast at length, but we've definitely talked about it. The Heat would never admit to doing this, and neither would the Milwaukee Bucks or these other teams, in or even the Wizards at this point, these other teams that are sort of in the mix for that 7th spot. But it's going to get interesting in the last week or so of the season when everybody's maybe a half game to a game within each other for that 7th spot. I think there's going to be some chicanery to try to get that 7th spot.
I'm not so sure. I think from the Miami Heat perspective, the way Spoelstra runs things and the culture and everything else like that, although I think they'd be perfectly happy to get the seventh seed. I think for them, it's all about what they're capable of doing. And I'm not so sure that other teams feel the same way, but from the Heat perspective, I think they have enough confidence where they can say, if we're playing at a high level, it doesn't matter who we face, we have a good chance. And so from our perspective, we think they have a better chance against a team like Boston that's going through a number of injuries and everything else and maybe has a lower ceiling in the playoffs than they did during the regular season, considering how much they've exceeded expectations. But I don't know that Miami would ever be passive about trying to win games. They're going to continue to try and get – look, for them – it's not like the big three era. They can't afford to flip a switch either. So they want to be able to continue to play at a high level as much as they can over these last eight games and try to have these winning habits fully ingrained as they enter into the postseason. So I don't know that you can afford to take a game or two off and say, oh, we'd rather just fight or hang on to the seventh seed. They control their own destiny.
What if Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade need to maybe rest their legs a little bit for the last couple games of the season? I'm looking at the last two games of the year.
Toronto and Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City, yeah, the Thunder and the Raptors at home. Look, they might not have a choice but to lose to Toronto unless Toronto decides the rest of their guys. Yeah. Oklahoma City, you imagine, is going to be competing even still for whatever seed that they're going to be trying to get home court advantage potentially for them on the line. So I could see them dropping those two games anyway, but the games before those, the Knicks, the Hawks, and the Hawks, three teams that have been practicing losing all season long, and I bet they're better at it than Miami is at this point because they have so much practice under their belt. It's going to be interesting. I do think that, you know, Washington lost to the Knicks the other night for no reason. I mean, there are going to be teams fighting for that seventh spot. It is certainly ideal. It's hard to debate whether or not the Heat will, but I think they should. Do you think they should?
I mean, I'd like for them to be in the seventh seed because I think they have the best chance. I don't know. Yeah, I guess I do. I just, it's kind of hard for me to feel comfortable saying, yeah, I wish they would just lose on purpose so that they can, you know, have the seventh seed or whatever. I mean, I don't know that it really matters ultimately. I think I do believe maybe a line along the same lines as what I suggested before that the team might think that if Miami is playing as well as they possibly can, they can beat Toronto. They can beat Boston or Cleveland, I think. But that, unfortunately, this team hasn't always lived up to that potential. They're just far too inconsistent, and that's a problem. So you'd want the best possible scenario, and that looks like Boston, at least on paper, given the number of injuries and everything else. So, yeah, I guess I'd like to see that matchup against Boston.
So it's a yes.
Yeah, I guess.
We got it. I got it from you. I finally got it from you. The anti-tanker. I finally got it. I finally got you to admit that you'd prefer them to lose a game, even if it's just the last game of the year.
Just for health purpose and resting, you know, that's all it is.
There you go. Perfect. That, you won't get fined by the NBA if you say that. That's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of tonight's game versus the Cavaliers. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments by using the hashtag AskLOHeat and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.